So we are at the end of these talks on the sadhana period of Sri Ramakrishna. As I tried to explain to you that the Vedic rishis discovered or thought out that human life is only for evolution. There is no other purpose. This idea seems very, very strong, very difficult to accept, that we are not here to stay, we are here to move on. Once upon a time, this moving on was accepted by the people of this land graciously, without any protest, that yes, this is the truth. Whether they understood it or whether they accepted it on faith, we do not know, because Indian civilization is very ancient. There is no history of that time. But the very fact that these ideas are present till today shows that there were quite a number of people who accepted these ideas as true, that we are here to evolve, that we have been born again and again and again just because to reach the ultimate level is very hard, and therefore one needs to have time, desire, strength to move on. This moving on was given to us in the words which are present till today: Brahmacharya ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, Sannyasa ashram. These ashramas were not taken as optional. Everyone passes through them, but there came a time when the last two ashramas became a problem. Today they are a very big problem, but there must have come a time when people started protesting, why should we leave home? Very simple idea. I have made a home with great difficulty, with great effort and tremendous labor. I have made a permanent home, and you are asking me to leave it. How is it possible? I won't do it. First it was, I cannot do it. Later on, I suppose people started saying, why should I do it? Till the children themselves started saying, why don't you go away? In today's society, it's become a huge problem, because as people grow older, they don't want to go away. So what do we do with this? Either we say these are wrong ideas, they must not be, or we try to understand why they were given to us. What could be the meaning of life if as we grow older, we are not prepared to let go, not prepared to leave? What will the new generations do? They also have to pass through the same passage. So, if gracefully people can leave and understand that it is for their own good, then there can be some amount of peace and happiness. Otherwise, peace and happiness vanish, and they have vanished from society as far as I can understand. In order to say that this is the truth, or make people believe that this is the truth, they also told us that there are these three levels of human evolution, which I have tried to discuss with you: Dvaita, Vishishta, Dvaita, Advaita. The central point of these ideas was, there is a God, Ishvara. Where is that Ishvara? To begin with, outside, external, which we have kept alive till today. So we have tremendous resistance to move from the idea of dualism, Dvaita is dualism, to Vishishta Dvaita. Though to some extent we tried to make believe that yes, God is the center of this universe, I am not the center. But it's a big problem. Am I the center, or is God the center? We are still not able to solve that problem. Every human being is challenged with this idea. Are you the center as an individual, or is there a universal truth called Ishvara, which is the center? If God is the center, then I become a satellite. You know the meaning of the word satellite. The sun is the center, and the rest are satellites, like the earth and the moon is the satellite of the earth, and there are other planets which go around the sun. Sun is the center, center of light. But if I am the center, then God has to become a satellite. And we try to live with this idea. We try to practice this idea also. I am the center, not only God, we forget God. The rest of the world is supposed to go round me. And we try our level best to make this idea function. I am the center, you move around me. I am the light. Not that there is a problem about it, because our psychology says, yes, everyone is a center. But the problem is, if everyone is a center, then what is my value? What is my unique value? We don't know. We don't seem to understand that our light is borrowed. It is not. I did not create my light. I did not create anything. Even the energy within my system belongs to the sun, not to me. Without the sun, there is no earth. Without the earth, there is no food. Without food, there is no body, and there is no center. But we haven't reached a level of thinking like that. Thinking is a terrible problem. But human beings or human system is supposed to have reached a level of evolution where thinking should be my main activity. We don't believe that is true. Or we try to say it could not be true. There must be some other truths which I will discover through my own effort. We haven't discovered anything. And most of us don't discover any truth. Anyway, so the Vedic idea was that human body is given or created by God or by myself. If we try to understand deeply that I am creating my body moment by taking in food. So I have created this body, this system. What for? In order to enjoy myself. We try our level best to enjoy ourselves, and we find that that also does not function most of the time. I won't say all the time. Most of the time it does not seem to function. So we reach a level where we do not know what exactly is happening in this universe or within myself. Then we have been given a word by our ancient psychologists called Maya. Everything is Maya. What does Maya mean? We don't think deeply. We just have certain words. We were given some words which are very, very significant. One word was, this universe is God's leela, God's play. Today most of us would say loudly or silently, what business has God to play with me? I don't like the idea that God is playing with me. I don't like it. All right, I don't like it, but nobody consults me whether it should be the truth or not. Then we were given another word called Maya. It's God's Maya. What is Maya? That also is very difficult to understand. They say in order to understand these ideas, you need to move on. You need to evolve. Evolve as what? We have tried to discuss that as physical bodies, there's nothing more to evolve. We are not going to grow any more horns or claws or things like that. We have left them behind. So now it's an evolution of understanding. But understanding is a very difficult thing. I have to have some time. Don't I have time? Of course I have it. But then my mind says there are so many activities, let me do those first. There are so many things to feel, to see, to touch, to smell, to eat. All those things have to be exhausted first, and then I will think. By that time, the brain does not function. Anyway, so Dvaita Vishishta Dvaita. I told you that India tried to give us this next level of functioning. God is not outside because He can't be found outside, especially today. In this age when we know that spaceships are going to the moon, to the Mars, and further still, they haven't found God anywhere outside. So we were given another idea. God is everywhere. Within me also. So within me becomes a terrible problem. Within where? Within the heart. What is the heart? We don't try to. It's too difficult. How can we understand God is within my heart? What is within my heart? There are many desires. What desires? To enjoy my life. So there also God does not find any place. So what do I do? Then finally they said, there is a next level. You are that reality. You are God. Ah, how wonderful. One should be able to accept it so easily. My ancient scripture is telling me that you are a wonderful person. You are the Atman. What is the Atman? Not the body, as you heard just now. Neither the body, nor the nose, nor the eyes, nor this, nor that. I never had mother, I never had father, I never had anything. Is that acceptable? Terribly difficult. So I come back. So India lapses back again and again from this idea and tries to live at some level. We used to have some faith in what the scriptures say or what the ancient rishis say. So we used to have some kind of faith, and faith made it possible for me to practice some kind of a yoga. I told you that with these three levels, four yogas are connected. So we practiced something because we had faith. Faith in what? Faith in the guru, faith in somebody, faith in the book or something. And life was bearable. Today, that faith is completely gone. Maybe we don't realize it. Maybe we try to fool ourselves and cheat ourselves. Oh, I still have faith. What kind of faith? If faith does not function, what is the use of faith? It has to function. If faith is true that God is everywhere and I am also that ultimate reality, I should be the most blissful of all people. I should be full of joy, full of peace, full of happiness. And I should be able to give happiness to anyone around me. I am not talking about Paramahamsas. I am talking about ordinary people. Because our psychology says ordinary people can rise to that level, become happy themselves and make others happy also. So, if that is not happening, that means we are in a very, very bad state. So the last level, as I told you, in the light of Sri Ramakrishna's life, arrived after he finished the sadhana of Vishishta Dvaitik point of view, that God is real, God can be realized, you can see God. So, he tortures himself. We don't believe in torturing ourselves. We believe in whatever. So, he tortured himself with such tremendous anguish, crying and falling on the ground and rubbing his face on the ground till blood came out, so that God was forced. Is it possible that I can force God to reveal his or her own truth? It seems it was possible. So once again, I am supposed to take it on faith, because I am not going to do the same thing. I am not going to cry and fall on the ground and rub my face. I don't want to do that. There should be an easy way. We believe life should be easy. I always ask, who gave you the guarantee that life is supposed to be easy? Who gave us this guarantee? Nobody, as far as I know. Maybe the parents in the beginning tried to tell the child, oh, you are a wonderful person, you are the most wonderful person, give it love and whatever, and make his or her ego supreme. We do that to some extent even till today to our children, that they are supreme, they are like gods, all right? These gods grow up. And then they start manifesting something which makes us want to control them and tell them they are not unique. What a contradiction. You start their life by telling them they are unique and give them all kinds of appreciation, and suddenly as they grow up, you want to tell them there's nothing very wonderful about you. So they grow up with this contradiction. We all grow up with that contradiction. And we are trying to get out of that contradiction by asking ourselves, am I really wonderful or not? And then what do I do? Instead of looking within myself, trying to find out what could be wonderful about me, I start asking other people, don't you think I'm wonderful? Nobody could care less. Nobody cares whether you are wonderful or not, because they are busy with their own problems. Anyway, so in the life of Sri Ramakrishna's sadhana, he has reached a level where gurus arrive. He has lived with faith for such a long time that there has to be a God. God has to reveal himself or herself because I want it. I have that desire. Think of the power of that desire, which we know we have many desires. So we divide ourselves into many desires. None of them is completely powerful. Whereas if you can put all that energy in one desire, maybe it would become tremendously powerful. This is what the life of Sri Ramakrishna proves. Have just one desire. You want to become a multimillionaire? Have just one desire. You will. You want to become anything? Have just one desire and nothing else. And nothing is impossible to achieve. So, a guru comes to Sri Ramakrishna. First, Bhairavi Brahmani came, tried to explain to him that yes, there are many paths of traveling to the idea of God. And he had faith, such tremendous faith. It's very astonishing that in this age where we have let go of this precious quality of faith and we don't know what to replace it with. So he has faith, and that faith of his attracts people of a special kind to come to him and become his gurus. So comes Totapuri. She will read a little bit in Kannada and then I will read in English. Totapuri came. Arriving at the Kali temple, Totapuri came first of all to the big open portico of the ghat. Wearing only one piece of cloth, the master was then sitting in an absent-minded mood, looking like an ordinary person. As soon as Tota's eyes fell on the master's face, radiant with austerity and beaming with the surge of devotion, he was attracted towards him and felt in his heart of hearts that he was not an ordinary person and that there were few who were so fit for Vedantic sadhana. What is Vedantic sadhana? Finally, what I was trying to explain to you, that the final word of our ancient scriptures is, you are that. Tat Tvam Asi. You are the ultimate reality, which we find impossible to believe in because we are stuck in superstition. Filled with curiosity and astonishment, Tota stepped forward and came up to the master thinking, ah, can there be such a fit aspirant for Vedantic discipline in Bengal, which is saturated with tantric practices? Yesterday I told you about something about the tantric practices of Sri Ramakrishna, which seem to be against Advaita Vedanta. This fight between Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita and Advaita has gone on in India for a very, very long time. Did the ancient rishis really speak the truth that there are these three levels? Do they contradict each other, or are they like three steps of evolution? We have still not decided in India because we do not, today especially, we do not know how to think clearly, how to understand the law of evolution and how to understand that human life has to have a purpose and that purpose cannot be left in the middle. That is, thinking of God as separate from myself. As long as I think of God as separate from myself, I will remain weak. I cannot be strong. So that strength comes only when we realize, first of all, there is a God. Next, God is within me. and third, that there is nothing but God, which is a terrible idea for us at this stage of development, that I am nowhere in the picture, there is nothing but God, because we think we have to remain separate forever and ever and ever. Observing him carefully, he asked the master of his own accord, "You seem to be a well-qualified aspirant. Do you like to practice Vedantic discipline?" The master said in answer to the tall, naked mendicant with matted hair, "I know nothing of that. I know nothing of what I should do or not do. My mother knows everything. I shall do as she commands." Strange ideas which we read, listen to, do not understand. Who could this mother be? The power of Brahman is called the mother of the universe. Power of Brahman, which in the life of Sri Ramakrishna became so predominantly present that the power is as true as the pure consciousness to which this power belongs. Power and powerful, in the words of Sri Ramakrishna, when the snake is moving, it's this universe, thinking of the mother of the universe. When the mother plays, when Shakti plays, this universe comes into being. When it withdraws into Brahman, the whole thing is absorbed back. Do we understand the idea? We can, if we wish to, every night we are absorbed back into something called deep sleep from which we manifest every day. This coming and going, which is like a cycle, and we know it very well, and yet we do not understand that this is the play of Brahman and Maya. You manifest yourself and then you become unmanifested. There's no problem, or there should be no problem in understanding that every day I wake up, I manifest myself, I play a little with sorrow and pleasure and go back into deep sleep where both vanish along with me. So where do we go and where do we come from? This has been the research of ancient rishis in India, that everything is within myself, I can enter back into myself, I can manifest myself. There should be no problem in understanding that, accepting that we do not enter deep inside. We go into deep sleep, but not consciously. We are forced. We are forced to wake up. We are forced to dream. We are forced to sleep. This compulsion. All sadhana is to get out of this compulsion. That I am doing everything through compulsion, through habits, automatically, is not supposed to give me happiness. And that is why life seems to be such a problem. That there is no happiness, there is no control, because I don't do anything consciously. And that is the challenge of the human mind. Do it consciously. Have control. Have control over your waking life, your dream life, your deep sleep life. Then only you will be able to find some kind of joy and happiness. Anyway, so Todha replied, "Then go, ask your mother and come back, for I may not be staying here for long." Without saying anything in reply, the master went slowly to the Divine Mother's temple. There, in a state of ecstasy, he heard the Divine Mother's words of advice. "Go and learn. It is in order to teach you that the monk has come here." Such strange ideas. The mother knows everything. She controls everything. She brings somebody to him. That person knows nothing. How strange. Is it possible? Today we do not know whether this is possible or not. You have to go to science, which is also discovering many things. You can be hypnotized and made to do many things which you won't remember anything about. How is it possible? Change of consciousness. So change of the level of consciousness is known to us, and yet we will not think about it clearly. In a divine state of semi-consciousness, the master then returned to Tota, his face beaming with joy, and informed him of his mother's instruction. On knowing that what the master meant by mother was not his earthly mother, but the image of the Devi installed in the temple, Tota, though charmed with his childlike simplicity, thought that the attitude of his mind was due to ignorance and superstition. This division that we make between the ultimate source or the universe or I myself is the cause of all the problems of human life. I cannot see the connection. The connection is there. We are all part of this universe. It isn't possible to go out of this universe and say, I am separate. I am not separate from food. I am not separate from wind. I am not separate from the light of the sun. I cannot be separate. And yet, our minds will give us this ignorance that I am a separate person in charge of myself. Try and be in charge of a single thought and you realize how much charge I have, how much control I have. We know at every step that we have no control, and yet the idea that I am in control does not die out. And this is what Advaita is trying to explain to us, that you are in control definitely, but only as the Samashti, as the universal. You are in control. As Ishvara, you are in control, but as a separate person, you are not in control. So the best is to get connected. Get connected with the ocean so that you know that there is infinite supply of water. A bubble thinking of itself as separate cannot survive even for a single moment. But that is what we try to do. All the time, that is what our ignorance is. I am a separate person. Therefore, you are separate, I am separate, the world is separate, everything is separate. All right, try and live in that kind of a world and see what happens. So this connection, which we forget again and again, is what Sri Ramakrishna is trying to re-demonstrate, that the connection cannot be lost, even if you believe it is not there. So recover it, understand it, have faith in it, and then find out some method of reconnecting or recognizing that the connection has never been lost. Don't connect to the body, don't connect to the world around. If you want to connect, this is Vishishtadvaita, if you do want to connect, then keep God in the middle. Connect to the universe through God. Connect to yourself also through God. If you don't want to do that, well then, suffer. That's the only way out. So, there's a lot of description. I wish you people would read it on your own, but then it's up to you. So, Totapuri did not say anything about his ignorance to the master and introduced other topics, thinking that the above mentioned impressions of the master's mind would very soon vanish when initiated by him, he would begin practicing the discipline of the path of knowledge, Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is supposed to be the ultimate challenge of the human mind because it is based on thinking clearly. Thinking clearly is very difficult because our emotions interfere. What we call in religious language, our attachments interfere. Interfere in such a way that our logical mind, or you can call it rational mind, or the level of buddhi does not wake up. waking up, the level of buddhi is supposed to be the nearest that human beings can go to with self-effort. But that self-effort is something. He said that the master would have to give up his sacred thread and the tuft of hair on his head before the scriptural initiation into sannyasa. This was the tradition of taking sannyasa according to the Vedic religion in India. It is still alive to some extent, but maybe we don't really understand the meaning of these things. The master hesitated a little and said that he had not the least objection if it could be done privately, but he would by no means be able to do it publicly, as it would deal a terrible blow to the heart of his old grief-stricken mother. This is the physical mother of his body. The teacher understood the reason why the master wanted to be initiated privately and said, "Very well, I shall initiate you in private when the auspicious moment comes." Then, with a view to spending a few days in suitable place, he came to the beautiful Panchavati, situated to the north of the temple garden, and spread his seat there. Traditionally, the sadhu does not live under a roof. Those days are also gone. We live under roofs. Remember that this age is very different. The path is also very different. This is what Sri Ramakrishna initiated. He lived under a roof also, a kind of a roof. He did not give up anything outwardly. He used to wear clothes like a householder. He used to wear shoes. And Keshav Chandra Sen remarked that he is dressed up very nicely because he had a red bordered dhoti. So he says, I have to attract the mind of Keshav, and therefore I have come decorated in this style. Anyway, we people are also like that. We are dressed like, quite nicely, so that you people are attracted. How strange. In this avatar, in this incarnation, Sri Ramakrishna and all his disciples, as well as the Holy Mother, they broke many traditional rules. And we need to study that also. Why did it become necessary that those rules should be broken so that a new kind of vitality comes into our civilization? Swamiji used to say, we are gentlemen sadhus. In the beginning, when Belur Math was constructed, there used to be some courts. The direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna wandered around all over begging their food and living under the trees. But as soon as Belur Math was constructed, Swamiji wanted to give some comforts to the new people. So the people in the neighborhood started saying, these are not sadhus, because they sleep on cots. They have beddings. What kind of beddings? Maybe mats in those days. They have regular food. So the idea by the time Sri Ramakrishna came on the scene was that sadhus are not supposed to be human beings at all. What are they supposed to be? Think of it, because these ideas are still there. Don't think they are not there. People still believe that sadhus should live on nothing. But unfortunately, today's sadhus have bodies, physical bodies, and minds also. And therefore, they need something. Then sometimes I think, because of the austerities of Sri Ramakrishna, as well as the Holy Mother, as well as his direct disciples, we are like people who have endowment funds, Endowment fund is where you can break, you can't break the original, but you can live on the interest on that fund. So they created the fund, and we are the people who are living on the interest of their austerities. Anyway, that's for myself. And perhaps you people also, if you think of it like that. So he told him, "Very well, I shall initiate you in private when the auspicious moment comes." So later, when the auspicious day arrived, Tota asked the master to perform his Shraddha ceremony. That is also a Vedic idea, that when you take sannyas, you are supposed to have died to the society, to the social customs. And it's very strange that also is broken in this incarnation. Swamiji went to the West. In America, he made a friend with a merchant, Francis Leggett. Maybe you know him. Francis Leggett wanted to get married, and he asked Swamiji to become his best man. I don't know whether you know these things. In Christian marriages, there is supposed to be a best man as a friend or as a whatever. So he asked him to become a best man. Indian tradition was that sadhus do not participate in marriages and things like that. But he broke the rule. There are many rules that are being broken. In India, we have a difference between priests and sadhus. Priests are supposed to be people who are householders, and they will perform all the pujas and ceremonies that are connected with social life. And sadhus are not supposed to participate in that. But in America, they don't know the difference, because in Christianity, there is no difference. So all the swamis there are supposed to give names to their children and have the ceremony of whatever, which is done by a priest in India. They have to perform all that also. I don't know how they feel, but they have to do it because that is the custom there. So remember that this incarnation is very new. Study it and you will understand something very beautiful. He brought sadhu back to society so that society sees that these are also human beings. They are also trying to achieve something through whatever struggle they are going through, and they can also participate in society. Society is also supposed to give something and get back something. This interaction today is very, very important in this age. Remember that also. So the rest is all that he makes him undergo the tremendous ceremony that takes place. And after he has done that, the path of Advaita is not this, not this, which you heard in the hymn today. Mano buddhi ahankara chittani na aham. Aham na. I am not. I am neither the mind, nor the body, nor the sense of smell. I never had mother, I never had father. Now how do you practice that? You think you can practice that? This generation is practicing it. Who told you to suspect or doubt the society you are living in? Aren't you practicing neti neti? Just think, what is it that makes me doubt other human beings' intentions? I am doing it all the time today. As a member of society, I must not trust this, I must not trust this, I don't trust this, I don't have faith in this. You are practicing neti neti, but without understanding the real meaning of neti neti. We are all doing it. So this age is very, very different, where we have learned not to trust. But this kind of not to trust is leading to unhappiness, violence, tremendous problems. So we have to have Vishishtadvaita, which says, oh yes, this is real. Society is also real. Everything that is there is also real. Evil is also real. Accept it. That is the message. So, it's like amalgamate all the three levels. Dvaita, Vishishta, Dvaita, Advaita. Try to have the strength to understand that you are living in a world which you can trust. It's a very big thing. Don't think it's a joke. But we are learning not to trust very easily, automatically. So Tota, a knower of Brahman, now encouraged the master to practice the contemplation of not this, not this. What is he asking him to do? Deny your body, deny your thoughts, deny your emotions. It doesn't start with the world outside. It starts very near. Deny your ego, deny everything, and accept the ideal of Brahman being the only reality. So not this, not this, a well-known discipline in the Vedanta, and remain identified with Brahman itself. Do you realize that deep sleep gives you something? Supposing a person is deprived of deep sleep, they'll go mad. So deep sleep is the nearest to understanding what Brahman could be like. Complete peace. Absolute surrender. Don't we surrender every night? Though now we have chaukidars. Chaukidar will keep awake and I will go to sleep. Not realizing that that does not really function. Anyway, the idea is that hints are given to us that there is something very positive in deep sleep. Think about it and try to superimpose it in your waking life. Can I do it? Yes. It's a practice. Do it. Think of the peace that you enjoy in deep sleep and superimpose it in your waking life. Make it conscious. This is the idea. This is also a kind of sadhana. There is a kind of Advaita Vedanta which believes that deep sleep is nothing but samadhi. But unconscious. I don't enter it consciously, I enter it subconsciously. Make it conscious, and that is what we are supposed to do. Not with the pill, sleeping pill, not like that. Do it consciously, without that. All right. He said to the master, Brahman, the one substance which alone is eternally pure, eternally awakened, unlimited by time, space and causation, is absolutely real. Through the influence of Maya, what could Maya be? Play of energy. Maya is nothing very complicated or nothing very strange. It's not a mystery. It is what we experience in our daily life. Tremendous confusion. So this tremendous confusion, because it's a play of energy, it's called Maya. Make it simple, you will understand. Whatever therefore is within the bounds of name and form can never be absolutely real. Why? Because it keeps on changing. That which keeps on changing, you cannot hold on to it. Like holding on to air. As Arjun tells Sri Krishna, you are asking me to control my mind, I find it as difficult as if you had asked me to take air and control it. I can't do it. I can't do it with my mind. Mind is nothing but energy, play of energy. So this play of energy is what we are supposed to understand as Maya. Maya is not something separate. It's within. So then, as I told you, you have to read it on your own. The day passed into night, the same day, same early dawn, when he was given sannyas. So the whole day passed in Totapuri trying to explain to him what he is supposed to do now. The day passed into night, slowly and calmly. The day rolled on. This is somewhere in the middle. So, just a second. So, Sri Ramakrishna says, when I listened to the conclusive dicta and sat for meditation, what happened over and over again is the disturbance of the universal mother's form. He says, I could withdraw my mind easily from all other things, but as soon as I did so, the intimately familiar form of the universal mother, remember that it arose out of the universal ocean of light, his first experience. So the universal light became a form. I tried to explain to you yesterday that energy can be converted into forms, and forms will go back into energy, play of energy. Energy itself is invisible. Today's physics tells you energy is invisible, but it can take a form. So we are all nothing but bundles of energy having taken a form, and the form has become predominant, the rest has gone into. So, almost despairing of the attainment of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, I then opened my eyes and said to the naked one, he used to call him the naked one, because one doesn't take the name of the guru. So in those days they believed in that, today we don't believe it. I opened my eyes and said to the naked one, no, it cannot be done. I cannot make the mind free from functioning and force it to dive into the self. Scolding me severely, the naked one said very excitedly, what? It can't be done? What nonsense. Just think of it. That kind of a guru is needed. He then looked about in the hut and, finding a broken piece of glass, took it in his hand and forcibly pierced my forehead with its needle-like pointed end between the eyebrows and said, collect the mind here at this point. With a firm determination, I sat for meditation again, and as soon as the holy form of the Divine Mother appeared, now, before the mind as previously, I looked upon knowledge as a sword and cut the form mentally. Think of it, what it means. In two, with that sword of knowledge, there remained then no function in the mind which transcended quickly the realm of names and forms, making me merge in samadhi. For 3 days he was in that state, and Totapuri was astonished. What he had realized after 40 years of endeavor, Sri Ramakrishna realized in 3 days, and he was astonished as to what could this be. So for us, the main thing is to realize such things happen even in this age. It is possible. I don't have to go into Nirvikalpa Samadhi immediately, though I do go by deep sleep. So realize and try and superimpose the idea of that peace in the waking life, and maybe we'll get a little hint here and there. After that he practiced many other things also. You know that. I wish you would have those who understand Kannada. There can be a regular reading of this book from beginning to end. I'm sure you will enjoy it. So pester Gita Prana that it should be done. I don't think he thought of the auspicious moment. It is a traditional idea that this ceremony takes place when night turns into day, dawn, Ushakal. Remember that the ancient Vedic rishis had discovered certain times of the day night, noon, evening, and they used to have sandhyas at that time. Sandhi means the conjunction of one kind of time in entering into another, and they found that they were very good, not auspicious only, for the mind to become calm. So that's what. These levels of consciousness which are being discovered in the West today, Freud started discovering the unconscious only in the 19th century. We had it from the very beginning that there are four levels: Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, Turiya. These four levels were discovered in ancient India and made it into a science. So what you need to understand is that in the ordinary state, waking state, if I wish to go to the in-between level between Nirvikalpa Samadhi and let us say the ordinary state, I have to travel. So that traveling is done. Sri Ramakrishna had already done it. There for him it was entering another room, which he says to the Holy Mother after he leaves the body and she is crying. And he says, "What do you think? Where have I gone? I have just entered another room." So the idea is that these states of consciousness can be controlled and you can go in and come out at will if you have practiced. There are many in-between levels between Nirvikalpa Samadhi and the ordinary waking level. We only know the dream level and the deep sleep, but there are many intervening levels also, just as between the notes of music. You know, from one note to another, from sa to re, there are many in-between levels. So these in-between levels of consciousness are called ecstasy or whatever you like to call them. It is not only emotions. It's the way we have got used to thinking about life and functioning in half light, half darkness. This semi-darkness, semi-light is what we live in our daily life. We are not conscious all the time. We lapse into subconsciousness. So the contradictions within our own life are nothing but the result of Maya. That is what is called Maya. The way we behave, the way we are disappointed, the way we expect, and nothing seems to happen according to our own expectation. So this is what is called Maya. To realize that my daily life is nothing but full of contradictions is to realize that I am always in a state of semi-consciousness. Oh yes, we need to convert it. That is what the idea is, that Maya contains two plays of energy, Vidya Shakti, Avidya Shakti. So move away from a Vidya Shakti which takes us towards selfishness, and Vidya Shakti which makes me trust. This trust, the lack of trust, which is increasing day by day, is what is making every society unhappy. Human life is nothing but experience. We do not know the secret of experience. How do we experience? Please, Gopesh Prana. We don't understand the laws of experience. What do we really experience? I can't go into it in great detail. You will read Sankhya psychology, you will understand that our experience is never direct. Now, have I thrown a stone? Our experience of waking life, dream life, is always indirect. It takes place through the nervous system. That which takes place through a gadget can never be direct. Do you understand that? Without the nervous system, without the nerves are in the brain, they are not visible. And yet, without them functioning, I can never experience anything. Read a little bit of what physiology? Without the brain functioning, I cannot experience. The brain must be a medium. So if anything comes through a medium, can it be direct? Has to be indirect. I don't even know the source of the laws on which this gadget functions. I don't know any law about my own functioning. The West is trying to discover layer after layer of these laws. But we couldn't care less. We don't want to know. All right, I don't want to know. Once upon a time I had faith in the method that was given to me. That would make me travel inwards. Today I don't have that. I don't want to understand science. What am I left with? Today they are discovering through their experiments that yes, there is a Pitriloka, which is the writer. There is a Brian Weiss. There is also Scott Peck. These two psychologists have done many experiments, and there are many. There is a Dr. Moody. I don't know, you people don't read. What can I do? They are discovering that people who have been declared clinically dead, when they come back, they give their experiences. So those experiences show that yes, somebody comes to take them, and that somebody can be their idea of God, like Jesus Christ if it is a Christian, or Sri Krishna if it is a Hindu, or it can be their own relative, somebody they really loved, will take them through a tunnel of light and into some different kind of a loka. So they are discovering these things, and we are the ones who had tremendous books. You read the Bhagavad carefully, you will find all these ideas mentioned there. So, what should we do? Either you read and understand that whatever the Hindus discovered in ancient times is true, or what? What is the alternative? Read Western books and then regain your faith, then come back. Like yoga. Yoga goes to America, then comes back to India. Everyone is doing yoga. How strange. Once upon a time it was the science of health as well as wealth as well as whatever in India. But it had to travel to America to come back to India. And what kind of yoga is traveling back to India? Hatha yoga. Health yoga, not real yoga. All right. Finished? Finished. All right. Thank you.